Well, I will be gone the next two Sundays. As Ken mentioned, I'll be gone from I leave Wednesday. I'll be gone from Wednesday and come, and it'll be just one day over 2 weeks. Lori calls it 2.5 weeks, but it's 15 days. So be back Thursday night at 11 o'clock. I'll leave Wednesday morning at 6. So really desire you guys to be praying. We will be, I know that we will be busy. We'll be teaching every night. We'll be doing some medical clinics during the day. We'll be doing a medical clinic on the weekends. So we'll be, and I'm sure you guys get to meet Matt someday, but when you do something with Matt, you get with the program in a fun way. He is always smiling, always up, and always ready. So it'll be fun, but I'm just not willing to make this sacrifice of leaving you guys, of leaving what's going on here, of leaving Lori and Caleb, using, you know, God's money to do this unless He's in it and He's working. And so we have come to the conclusion that that's the case. So we're trusting Him. So please be praying. There's a lot going on here. Maybe you know it, maybe you don't know it, but there's a lot happening. And God has been working. And when that happens, we don't teach and talk about demons and all that stuff a lot. There's a demon behind every bush, and every time something bad happens, you go, oh, that's the demon. Well, most of the time it's just us, you know. But we know from Scripture there is an enemy, and he does work against what God is doing. And so, but he has no power over us if we are trusting God and dependent on him. And there's been both of that happening a lot this week. I won't go into detail, but and a lot of people are in the process of stepping out to be obedient, to take some steps of obedience, and to go to the next level, trusting God. And when you do that, you can expect resistance. So it's not to scare you. Actually, the very thing that Satan means for harm, God will use for good. And the very thing of attack will actually strengthen us, and we will drive us to God for more intimacy and fellowship with Him. It works like that. So, just a little warning maybe. And, you know, while I'm gone, you know, there is a, when any one of you is absent, there is a gap, and I feel it. I really do. The body feels it when any one of us is missing. And so I'm going to be missing, and there's going to be a gap. And so I hope that you are alert to opportunity to fill in that gap, all of you. And for you guys that I get with every week, then I just ask you to make the effort to get with one of the other fellas and just make that happen. And, you know, we have a thing here, and I'm not going to go into detail. We've talked about this already, and we'll teach about it in the future, called plurality of leadership. Now, what that means is that the leadership decision-making authority does not lie with one person. It's not a board of directors following one guy that's setting the plan. That's not the way we operate. Now, there's different levels of responsibility and influence and roles and that kind of thing. But when we make decisions in here, we look for unity in the whole body. But we have leadership, elders, and that's Carlton and Ken, and both of those guys carry the same decision-making ability, authority that I do. So I know you see more of me, you see a little bit more of me, more influence, and that's okay. There's kind of a position within a position, of a sort of a shepherd within an elder too. But all the same, there's the same authority, if that makes sense to you from our studies that we've done in the past. So if anything happens to come up while I'm gone, I mean, I'll be available by phone, but Ken and Carlton, just turn to those guys just as you would turn to me if something comes up that needs to be dealt with. They carry the same place that I do. So, and it's good for all of us to have to fill in the gaps a little bit. And that happened just the last time that I know I was gone. It's like a great service and things went well. And so, but it's not just the service. It's during the week. It's maintaining contact with the body, because that's something that we kind of do. The Lord, we sort of connect, try to make sure everything's connected at least sometime during the week. And so that's passed on to you guys now. And that's already been taking place. Manny just walked up to Lori just then and just a little bit ago and offered to watch Caleb one night, and then Lori and Michelle could go out to a movie or something. I thought, wow, that's cool. That's good. So I think that good things will happen, and something God likes to do is sometimes if you think somebody is doing it, He may just pull them out of the picture and let you see that He's doing it. So that's what we'll look for. Marriage. We're back into it another day. You know, I hope you're getting a picture here that this thing about marriage is not this isolated little thing in your home. It's just a part of the big picture. It is absolutely critical to what we are doing as a body, to what the body is doing worldwide. This thing of marriage is, God places a special emphasis on this. And so we too need to have that same emphasis. Not that we're inwardly focused. We've talked about that so much. That the purpose of the family and the home is not so we can just run around in our little castle and be happy with each other. That's good if you can do that. We want that. But we have a higher and more noble purpose than just that. And today, for some reason, some people were thinking this would be interesting for you today. We're talking about conflict. Conflict within the marriage. And this today is not just for marriages that are in trouble. Because all of us know that feeling. Am I right? All of us know that feeling of, we're just, how do you know? Oh, you watched us? That's right. You used to live with us for a year. You need to be quiet. all of us know that feeling. I think that it's like, man, you are just battling. It's not, if it's not this, it's that. It's just like this. Maybe you go continual every day, and it's just, you're on edge. You don't want to be. You don't like it. It doesn't feel good, but you're there. You're just on edge. There's tension in the air, and it's not good for you. It's not good for the kids. It can be a problem, and it can happen to anybody. It can happen to any marriage, and it cannot just go away in a week. It can go on and on and on for two people that really are in love, and it can just, it can, so it's something that we need to talk about and deal with. And like I said, not just for marriages that are in trouble. This is to take us to the next level of unity, of joy, of co-laboring, of communicating. Communication is so critical for everything we're talking about. So what we talk about today is a way to take your communication to the next level and actually use conflict to your benefit of the marriage. Now, marriage, this takes some attention and it takes some investment. If you think you're just going to skate along and do some church work and have quiet time and be great at this, at doing your job, and be great at making disciples, but you're not going to give attention and time to your marriage, everything else is going to fall apart if you don't take care of this. It takes time and it takes attention, and it takes attention on purpose. I think it takes attention where you plan what you're going to do, and you're going to give time and attention and investment on purpose. So when we wrap this up, if we ever do, with the marriage, and we move on to the raising the kids, which was my purpose in starting this, but we hadn't got there yet. When we wrap up the stuff on marriage, what we're going to do is I'm going to give you some guidelines. We'll talk about it one Sunday. I'm not sure if it'll be the Sunday I get back or the next Sunday, but give you some a worksheet to help you scripturally work through issues in your marriage, and not just issues in your marriage, but kind of even a mission statement for your marriage, just like we have for the church, so that you know where you're headed, you know how you're going to get there, and what you want out of the marriage, and what you can expect to get out of the marriage. And after we do that worksheet, you're going to do that just with your spouse. After you do that worksheet we'll teach on children, and then you can do a similar worksheet with the kids, that you understand your goals for your children, and you understand together how you're going to get there. So you're able to communicate that and to do it in a scriptural fashion, to scripturally work through the issues. Now, this will also relate to single people and how this relates to them and the body. We'll try to cater this to those that may be in a marriage that you're the only one that's really willing to sit down. You're the only one willing to do this. How do you do this by yourself? We'll give some counsel on how to do that. Now, we all run into trouble at some point in our marriage. We all run into trouble in our marriages. And so we want this body to be a body that has the ability to counsel and to teach about marriage, and when there is trouble, that there's freedom to get some counseling. Even if there's leadership marriages that are in trouble, or they just run into a difficulty, they just need some help. And so when you're going through this, when you're going through this worksheet, as we just kind of look at it so you can be thinking about it, as you go through this worksheet, if you come to an impasse of, we can't get through this, then you bring the worksheet and you can sit down with me or with me and Lori or with Ken or, you can sit down and we'll work through it together. We'll pray through it, we'll apply scripture to it, and we'll work through it. That needs to be a part of the ministry of this body to the family to be able to do that. So we're going to try to move in that direction. So the family is vital to the health of this body, and we're not going to ignore that. We're going to try to deal with those issues. And here's another thing. Some of you may run into some ugly stuff when you start going through this. Some of you may be even run into some ugly stuff that you don't know about until you work through it. And then you got to deal with it. And then Steve has made things worse in your marriage for a little while. Let me see your bulletin. So, we are not afraid of ugly stuff. Okay? We're not afraid of ugly stuff. We have the answer for that. I don't care how ugly it is. We have the answer in the gospel for that. There is a solution. No matter what is in your past, whether it's some severe abuse, perversion, whatever it might be, there's an answer in the gospel and some healing for that. So if that happens to be a holdup, it needs to be dealt with and worked through so that you can go on to the next level in your marriage. So if you haven't gone through all the teaching, then get the tapes. I already talked to Josh. He's ready to go. He has some. He'll get you the tapes, and you can work, because you'll need to listen to all the teaching before you work through that. So I give you a kind of a heads up so that you can have that done by the time I hand you the worksheet. So where have we been? Principles, scriptural principles of marriage. We've talked about. We've got this pattern now. We talk about the principles, then we talk about some practical application. We've talked about the needs of a man, the needs of a woman. We've talked about the different love languages, the way we communicate love to each other. We've talked about the purpose of marriage. Now, this is a big one. This is hard today, is to know really how to. You know what? I was going to read our purpose statement just as a review. Now, think about. As I do this, think about how the family, how marriage fits into this. Mission statement. Knowing God and making Him known. Our purpose is His purpose, and we labor together to that end by reaching out to win others to Christ, tending to their growth, equipping and building them up in Christ, then sending them out into the world, be it near or far, to win others to Christ. Win, tend, send. That is not possible to fulfill that unless we have some strong marriages as a base, families to do that. Some good examples. Okay. Have you ever known or been around or been yourself the Bickersons? You know them, don't you? The Bickersons. You ever taken a trip with the Bickersons? It's the minute you get in the car, it's let's go. You're late again. Get your stuff together. Let's get out of here. Well, all you have to do is worry about yourself. I got to get the kids packed. You were supposed to get the snacks. You didn't get the snacks. What are you thinking? Which way are you going? You're going to get stuck in traffic. This is terrible. We can't go this way. What are you thinking? He pushed me. He bit. No, I did not. Have you ever been the Bickersons? Have you ever went anywhere with the Bickersons? Sometimes you're the Bickersons for just, like I said, a week. Or sometimes you may know somebody that you just want to officially change their name. Because it's always like that. No matter where they go or what they're doing, it's always on the edge of conflict. And it's at every turn. And when there's not conflict out in the open, there's tension. So I kind of see two types of conflict. There's the constant bickering, or on the verge of constant bickering. I call it guerrilla warfare. And you see this, there's like, when something's said, it has an underlying meaning. It's criticism laced with humor. It's ulterior motive. It's comments and sneak attacks and periodic truces. That's not a good place to be. If you're there, even if you're not there, to prevent yourself from going there, you need to quit this and learn how to have productive conflict with peace in between. Because you're not going to have a marriage without conflict. So we can learn how to have productive conflict, or we can have this constant bickering, guerrilla warfare, tension, or we can just have this kind of peace, truces, and then blow-ups. Or we can have peace, and we can have productive conflict. You know what those blow-ups, it's battles. It's no longer little utterings and hints. It's the gloves come off and somebody's going to get hurt. And people do get hurt, and things are remembered for a long time that are said in the heat of battle. So, I think we've identified, hopefully, that, and we'll get into it a little more, that all conflict is not bad. And that conflict should clarify things, and it should bring unity. And the same is true in the body. Do you know, unity in the body is not about not having conflict. In fact, it might be about having conflict. Because we're not holding grudges unsaid. We're not just thinking that you're just all wrong in your theology. Or we're not just thinking that, why do you always talk to me like that? We actually have a little conflict. And we get it over with. We resolve it. I'm telling you, this is a part of unity. So we need to learn how to do this. And we've talked about unity too, that unity is not the lowest common denominator. It's not just everybody caving in and giving in. It's finding God's desires for this particular situation and circumstance. It's not, you don't bring unity to your marriage by caving in and becoming less. You do not cave in. You still maintain and be all 100% give yourself completely to God. You don't give in to the pressure that you will receive. If you're giving yourself 100% to God, at some point, you will receive pressure from your spouse to not do that. To lighten up a little bit. To, you know, don't be so radical. I don't care. That's the way it is. So that's not what we're talking about with unity. We don't give in to that. But there is some compromise. So what causes these battles and continual squirmishes, the edginess that we're talking about, the tension, or even the out-and-out wars? What causes those things? Let's turn to James. Chapter 4, verses 1 through 7. James is back there. I think everybody's already beat me there, huh? After Hebrews. James 4, 1 through 7. Okay, remember, he's talking, this is to the body, but it's also to, this has to be to marriages also. And he's also, remember, he's talking to Christians here. He's going to talk about some killing and that kind of stuff, but it's to people that are Christians. They're not actually doing those acts. So it's more of a attitude. Okay. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You want something, but don't get it. you kill and covet. Okay, so he's not really, he's not talking to people out there. He's talking to people in the church. So he doesn't mean actually, you know, pulling the trigger. But I guess it could include that too. You kill and covet, but you cannot have what you want. You quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with the wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. You adulterous people. Adulterous people, that's putting something ahead of God. Giving your adoration, your love that belongs only to God, to some person, something, something. You adulterous people, don't you know that friendship with the world is hatred toward God? Anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God. Or do you think Scripture says without reason that the Spirit He calls to live in us envies intensely? But He gives us more grace. This is why Scripture says He opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. There's something inside each of us that is self-motivated, that says, I want pleasure. Do you know the desire for pleasure is at the root of almost everything we do? At the root of why we get married, it's even at the root of why we seek God. And that's not bad. God tells us to find our pleasure in Him. He tells us to find joy in the joy of our spouse. It's not that we, as Piper says, it's not that we have too much desire for pleasure. It says we don't have enough desire for pleasure. We're satisfied with these earthly things when He's offering us pleasure, eternal pleasure, and pleasure in Him. But what causes these conflicts? It's that that selfish motive of wanting pleasure. It's I want my way. It's selfishness. It's if you get this, then I want that. If you have this time, then I want my time. It's protecting your pleasure. It's protecting your rights. It's you get into the cycle of fighting for what you want, getting it maybe, getting it some of the time, having a little bit of happiness. The cycle of happy and the peaks get fewer and fewer because you cannot obtain full pleasure and you cannot satisfy those desires. You can't do it. You can't satisfy those desires in the world. They can only be satisfied by God. He reserves that for Himself. So we're setting ourselves up for misery in our marriage and personal misery if we continue down that road. Our goal is to be satisfied in God, not a situation, not things, not a person. It's idolatry to do that. Adulterous is the way it's worded in James. Think about arguments that you've had. So just think about things that you have said during arguments with anybody, particularly with your spouse or somebody close to you. You encroached on me. I have to do all the work. I don't get to do anything. You don't meet my needs. You're not pulling your fair share. It's me, 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 I. Now you look back over those verses and see if you don't see that in there. It's about pursuing your own selfish pleasure that causes the quarrels and the bickering among you. It's selfish. It's self-motivated. It stems from the Adam nature, the old nature, being in control. So, where is the love then? Where is the love? Something that we can take one step to move out of this, to put us on a place where we can understand what needs to happen next, if you followed all that. If our emotional tanks are empty, then we are on edge. If we talked about that with the love languages last week. If you are not showing love to your spouse in a language, in a way that they understand and they receive, and that goes on, and you're not filling the emotional tank, just humanly speaking, not filling the emotional tank, then eventually that person will become drained. They'll become emotionally drained, and they will be on edge. Is this not true? Guys, you come home, your wife's been with the kids all day long. They've been going crazy, driving her crazy. She's not had an adult conversation for a week, and it's like they're just frantic. They're emotionally, and you hadn't been there. What do you get when you come in the door? There's a little edginess there, maybe. that emotional tank needs to be filled. That is one of the causes for that continual bickering. Love language helps put us in the position to deal with issues, and it brings joy back to the relationship. So, all it does, it puts us in a place where we can deal with the real issues. If we are showing love to our spouse, that needs to be something we take, whether it's by ourselves or if the other person's taking it or not, it's something we need to take that step. But where's the engine room? Where is real love produced? Where is long-lasting love produced? It's the kind of love, it's the consistent love of Christ for each other. And I can tell you one place that this comes from. One place that this comes from, the ability to love consistently with the love of Christ, it comes out of what we call the inner room. It comes out of spending time alone with God. Time in the Word, time, intimate fellowship with God. If we are not submitted to Him and in fellowship with Him, there's no way that we can love another person in the way that He's calling us to love. Because we're going to take a look at that in just a minute, and you'll see that it's impossible unless we have that. So let's look at love for one another in its purest form. It's love that works. It's love that never fails. So let's go to the love chapter in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. That means it does not turn to resentment. Love is kind. I tell you, true kindness in a relationship goes a long, long ways. It does not envy. It's happy if the other person is happy. It takes pleasure from the good things that happen to another person. It does not boast. It is not proud. It's not thinking of yourself. It goes back to that in James. It's not thinking of yourself first. It's so basic. It's so simple. It's putting the other person's needs ahead of your own. It is not rude. That too goes a long ways. Just being gentle and kind. Speaking kindly to one another. It is not self-seeking. There, it just goes right back to that. Thinking of the other person before speaking. Is not easily angered. Anger, harshness can just kill the love and the gentleness of a relationship. It keeps no record of wrongs. You've done that to me the last time. I'm getting sick and tired of you doing that. Well, if you're thinking that, if you're saying that, that means you're adding up the wrongs. You haven't forgiven them as they've come along. That's a hard thing because we like to stack them up. And when they get so high, that gives us a platform we can attack from. But we keep no record of those wrongs. We forgive instantly. We forgive. Remember, I'm talking about taking our marriage to the next level, to where we can really be used for God's purposes. No record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects. Always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. You know, so many times in any relationship, we look for our own advantage in a situation or a circumstance. How does this work to my advantage? How can this give me more free time? How can this give me more free money? How can this do something for me? Rather than thinking of the other person. So this kind of love, this kind of pure love, consistent pure love, comes from what I will term the triangle. And that is, if I'm going to love Lori with the love of Christ, you think about the love of Christ for a minute, who, with nothing in return, gave His all, the most that could be given, with no thought of Himself. If I'm going to have that kind of love, then I know I can't have that on my own, because I have that thing in me that goes for quarrels and looking after myself. So if I'm going to have that for Lori, then I have to be right with God. Nothing between me and God. But I have to be taking care of that every single day, because it's not going to happen if I'm not right with God. Now, sometimes we find ourselves we're in that by ourselves. And there's some particular advice to us in that. We're not going to go into that right now. We're talking about the way God's plan is that then the other person also is in this right relationship with God. When you have that triangle where there's nothing, there's complete, free, open communication, love flowing between the two, because it's flowing to God. That's the way He depends it. That's the way He designed it. And, you know, God desires us to be God-dependent. Not just in our marriage, if we look at it like this, it can be obvious. But God desires our whole life to be like this. A decision to make. Discipline you need. Whatever. It's like, God, I'm trusting You to give this to me. I'm trusting You to guide my decision in this. I'm trusting You to help me with this. That continual dependence on God. That's where He wants us. Okay, understanding and resolving conflict. So those are kind of the scriptural principles we've looked at. Now we're going to move into a little more practical application. So first, we must be resolving personal spiritual conflicts and getting radically right with God if this is going to work. But we have to recognize that conflict is an opportunity for communication. And the goal is to resolve conflict, not to win the battle. To resolve the conflict, not to win. It's to discover God's desire. Whatever conflict you have, the point is to discover God's desire. 1 Corinthians 13 is not about folding up and avoiding conflict. It's about showing love in the midst of conflict. So let's look at some... we're about out of time, but maybe I can run down these real quick. Some rules of engagement. Remember the goals. Remember the goals of marriage. Remember the goals for your relationship and your purpose in marriage. Okay, number one. Hear the other side. You have to hear the other side so responsible decisions can be made. And I'm going to tell you something. It's difficult sometimes to see through the eyes of another person. And if you're a person that suffers, is this a disease, that tends towards criticalness of other people, I don't care how much discernment you have, if you tend towards criticalness of other people, you will have a hard time with this, of actually seeing through the eyes of another person, because you will just tend to see your own viewpoint. It takes understanding the value of conflict. It's why we're different. You notice how people marry sometimes people that are just like their opposite type of person. We need to have another perspective. We need to hear another perspective on things. When under any conflict, we need to hear another side. And we need to be heard. Both of those things. Some of us just clam up and don't say anything. Y'all remember the lineup the game we played at the cabin, everybody wasn't here, but we gave everybody a number to get in the line according to the number and put a blindfold on. You have to get in this straight line, and you have to do it without talking. So everybody has to communicate and figure out what number everybody else is and get in an order. And so in watching that, you remember we talked about that, is that everybody's communicating different ways. Some people are clapping. Some people are stomping. Some people are digging in the gravel. Some people are slapping you on the back. Some people are giving like these. And you notice that. If somebody refused to communicate, then they messed the whole thing up. They're standing out there by themselves. I don't remember who did this. Or maybe I do. And it doesn't work. You have to communicate. It was just a picture of that. Or you have the person that's just like loud and just giving their number and patting, and they're not listening to you. You try to give them your number and they walk off. So it takes hearing and it takes being heard. Both sides. And you have to see the value in that. Sometimes a husband will hear all this stuff on leadership and he'll try to take some leadership and make some decisions and take a stand and make some decisions without input. That's a mistake. That's a mistake. You start making decisions for your family without input and you're going to be in trouble. Because you're going to make the wrong decision. Not just because somebody's going to be mad at you. You're going to make the wrong decision. There's a place in Genesis, we won't go there, I think it's chapter 12, where Abraham is wanting to do something, and Sarah, or I can't remember which way it was, but Sarah said, no, don't do that. And she seemed like she was wrong. When I read it, it seems like Sarah's wrong. But and so Abraham was going against Sarah's counsel, and God spoke to Abraham and said, Abraham, listen to Sarah. Okay. The decision may fall to the man. But if he's going to do that without having legitimate input and hear input, then the mistake is going to be made. But both sides need to hear and be heard. Number two, rule of engagement. A cooperative spirit committed to resolution. That sounds easier than what it is. But in the heat of the moment, you don't want resolution. You want to be right. And you want to be proven right, and you want to win, and you want them to know how wrong they are. That's the emotion of it. But we have to, from the beginning, be committed to resolution, to a win-win situation. Not having a competitive environment. To have a win-lose or a right-wrong situation is not going to work. And if there's a blow-up, then you need to examine that and see why there was a blow-up. You know, sometimes there's an irrational blow-up. I won't point to husband or wife. But there may be a good reason for it. But it's just been blown out of proportion a little bit. But there may be a good reason for it that needs to be looked at and examined. So, we have to hear from both sides. And there needs to be a cooperative spirit. Not a competitive environment. Number three, God's way is all important. Not getting your own way. Remember, that's our tendency. That's everybody in here, that's your tendency, and the disagreement is to get your own way. Now, you may do it in a whole lot of different ways. You may shout and scream, or you may pout, but that's your objective. That's what you tend to naturally. But we're deciding ahead of time that God's way is what's important. We want to discover God's way in this. Number four, non-defensive. You could say remain calm here. If you're going to assume something about what the other person is thinking, assume something about their motive, then assume this, that the source of disagreement is from their concern for the marriage. If you want to assume something, assume that. You really shouldn't assume anything. You should find out what they're thinking, even if they don't want to tell you. Now, a warning there, particularly men, that men, or maybe this is to the wives, is that men sometimes like to go to their cave, to their timeout place, and regroup. And you have to allow that to happen. That's a necessary step. But don't let it ride too long, or you end up never having the conflict that needs to happen so that you can resolve the issue that has come up. So, where were we? Non-defensive? Not assuming? Not falling into defense mechanisms. What are defense mechanisms? Aggression. You know, it's just not worth dealing with this. Man, I got to face this again? This is not worth dealing with this anger, with this aggression. People control through aggression. Aggression, pouting, that's a form of defensiveness. Withdrawal, refusing to talk. The blame game, that's just shifting the attention from where it needs to be. Intense anger, false submission. Okay, we'll just do it your way. That's not real. And that's not good. Spouses believe, this is connected to one we already talked about, but each person has to really believe that hearing both sides is necessary for resolution. Hearing both sides is a good thing. And number six, spouses believe, both people believe that hearing both sides is necessary. Number six, disagreements are confined to issues rather than personalities. I know you've heard this one before, but this is really true, is that not resorting to personal attacks. You think about the you statements that you say when you're arguing. You always do this. You don't think. You're not thinking. You're doing this again. You've said this again. So we confine those to the issue. We discuss the issue at hand. Number seven. Now, remember, these things don't go just for marriage. This stuff works in the body too. Just regular relationships. Number seven, the relationship is more important than the need to be right. Consider the value and the depth of the marriage relationship above the value of personal ideas and opinions. Do you follow that? That's if you think back how we've studied the importance that God places on marriage, that's given a picture of Christ and the church. It's given something about His character, the unity, the tri-unity of God. Marriage carries a lot of weight, a lot of value. God places on that. That needs and the relationship itself must be more important than your need to be right. So, these things can be difficult to change because your style of communication is pretty ingrained in you. How you communicate, how you have conflict is ingrained in you. Probably came from your parents. You probably don't want to admit that, but probably came from your parents. And you could probably kind of narrow down to which parent it came from if you think about it. I didn't say anything. But remember love, what we were talking about in 1 Corinthians 13. You are not tied to that pattern. You are not tied even to that heritage that was given you. Because you can ingrain a new pattern because you have the power of the Holy Spirit living in you. So you are not tied to that. And it may take some work to get through it and to change. We talked about that. Turning the ship around doesn't happen overnight. It can take a while. There must be patience and perseverance. And hopefully these things that we will look at, kind of the worksheet type things, will guide you to work through some of these things. And I'm sorry we went a little bit long today. Sorry to Brian and Ladee too, the kids.